Proceed to the next case for the day, which is appeal number 03-2358, United States versus Willie Dantzler.
Ms. Hicks, you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
I think you have the thanks of all three members of this court for your splendid work.
You do. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Allen.
May it please the court, I am Ron Allen from the Northwestern University School of Law here at your request to argue for reversal of Mr. Dantzler's conviction and in the process to point out any wrinkles that I observe in your case law, of which I think there are two.
You weren't disassociating yourself from your client's position with your opening statement.
No, well, I'm going to argue what you asked me to argue, Judge Bauer. How you straighten those wrinkles out depends on the meaning of the unless clause of 18 U.S.C. 921A20 that immunizes an individual who has received a discharge document restoring civil rights from the use of a prior conviction unless the state explicitly reserves any prohibitions on the possession of firearms. Now, I have to tell you, I'm standing here a little bit with my knees knocking and in fear and trembling, not because of the daunting task of facing you, but because I fear I must violate the very first rule of rhetoric that Mrs. Humbleback drove into us in high school, which is never start an oral presentation with an apology. But I must. On page 12, note 9 of our main brief, we suggest the statute here is ambiguous. I want to withdraw that. This statute is as clear as day, as plain as it is possible to be. The language of the statute says any conviction for which a person has had civil rights restored shall not be considered unless such pardon, yada, 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 expressly provides. Everyone agrees that what civil rights are the rights you get when you're a citizen of the state, which is a right to be a juror, right to vote, and a right to hold state offices. You cannot restore what has not been deprived. It's plain, then, that Congress has already determined what a restoration of deprived rights is that matters for this, and any restoration of those rights which were deprived carries too great of a risk of mousetrapping to allow. The government makes what I hate to say, is a frivolous argument that the right to be a juror is not deprived in Illinois. They rest on one case in which a prospective juror lied about whether he had ever been charged, and the judge held that because of that dishonesty he could be dismissed as a juror. So it's plain that the right to be a juror is not deprived under Illinois. The two other rights that do matter were restored by this document. So the test we...
Can you just clear up one factual question here? What I'm looking at that letter right now, and I can't tell by reading the letter what conviction it's referring to.
Everyone accepts in the record that it's 1984, the 1984 conviction that is the predicate offense in this case.
How do we know that by looking at the letter?
How we know that by looking at the letter, I don't really know. It's plain.
He had other convictions preceded 84.
That's true. This is the letter that in the record is attributable to the 1984 conviction. He was indicted for the 1984 conviction, and that's the only issue in the case.
Okay.
So going back to the test, as we say in our brief, if a state specifically informs an individual in writing of the restoration of each of those civil rights relevant to 921 of which the individual has been deprived, then the state must further expressly provide that gun possession is forbidden. Indeed, the plainest meaning of this statute is that if the state restores any of the rights, right to be a juror, right to hold office, and so on, although it's not necessary for you to reach this conclusion to reverse the conviction in Dantzler's case, because he had the two rights restored that were not deprived under Illinois law. The government would suggest that the statute requires Dantzler to be informed of the restoration of a right to be a juror, even though this wasn't deprived. This confuses necessary and sufficient conditions. If a state restores all three rights in a document or says it, obviously that's sufficient, but it's not necessary. And indeed, it leads to the absurd result of having to restore rights that were never deprived. Now, all the circuits that distinguish between document and no document cases, and there is a split of in the circuits on this point, but all of them that make this distinction have agreed that in situations in which two rights have been restored by a document and one restored by statute, that suffices. The D.C. Circuit in Bost, the Sixth Circuit in Cassidy, the First Circuit and Blodgett. Even the Supreme Court opinion that the court relies on, Karen, which actually is completely irrelevant to this case, but in the underlying facts of it, which they don't tell you, the First Circuit reached the same conclusion that two rights that were restored by statute where one wasn't deprived was sufficient for the unless clause. The only possible exception to this rule that I can find in the cases is your opinion in Gillum, actually, that could be read to require that a discharge document restore rights that were not deprived, and in this case, again, the right to be a juror. But in that case, the right to hold offices which was deprived was not restored, so the outcome in Gillum is right in any event. Moreover, the panel, I think, simply accepted the statement at oral argument that the right to be a juror had been deprived and operated on that basis.
Well,
and
part of this, I think, is at one time that was true. You lost your right to serve in a jury, you lost your right to vote, you lost your right to hold position of trust, right, honor, and confidence. I suggest that the letter clearing up is probably just left over. They never bothered changing it. They just went ahead and restoring rights that had not been, because the subsequent statutory changes
That's the best argument I've heard to explain this, quite frankly. I don't know if it's true or false, but
you can take my word for it, that's where it was. I don't know, and that's the letters they were using back 45 years ago, 50 years ago, when I was state prosecutor.
This does raise an interesting question, though.
It's a shocking thought.
The government would, in another, I think, inappropriate argument, would have you affirm Mr. Dantzler's conviction because he's a bad guy and wasn't subjectively misled, asking you to take into account some general notion of equities. Your point, however, I think, focuses on that question. He has 17 and a half years of his life at stake here because of the inattention of state bureaucrats. If there are inequities in this case, they cut in favor of Mr. Dantzler, not in favor of affirming his conviction. I want to finish this thought about Gillum, though, if I may. Gillum made another mistake. Gillum was a document case. It relied, however, on Williams, which is a no-document case. The two are completely different. Without a document, you simply look at the landscape of state law. With a document, you look at what was communicated in the document. Now, there is, in your case law, some intimation that maybe the communication should say all or any or something of that sort. But my point here is that Congress has already made this determination. If you restore the rights that have been deprived, the mouse-trapping provision is instantiated, and the state then has to, in addition, reserve the right to possess a gun and so on.
Don't you think this is an issue that always should be ironed out before the trial?
Oh, I mean, certainly agree with that.
There were stipulations. There were all kinds of things that happened here.
There were stipulations, but in this case, he did move prior to sentencing. Prior to sentencing, the judge decided on the merits. I don't think there's a question about jurisdiction here, whether it's been waived or forfeited.
Yeah, but the problem is the stipulation, because wasn't there there was a stipulation that this was a felony and a felony that counted.
There was a stipulation
before the jury.
Right. This is a stipulation that there was a felony for which there was a sentence of greater than a year.
Right.
He then raised the issue as to whether or not, after the jury came back, as to whether or not this counted under the federal
statute. Well, the stipulation is always to avoid the jury hearing the horrors of the felony that we committed.
The problem is
that the stipulation then is a fact that the jury took into account, and I understand there's post-trial objection to it, but I mean that's a real problem, it seems to me, the fact that the stipulation exists and it's a qualifying felony, and it's not atypical the way it was done here.
But the question here is a question of law, not a question of fact. The question is whether or not under the federal law, the 1984 conviction is a suitable predicate offense. This is not a question of fact. It's a question of law. He asked for arrest of judgment after the conviction on a legal ground. The court below dealt with it on the merits, and it's now properly before you. And I want to emphasize again, it is a question of law, not a question of fact that is being addressed here.
In your rebuttal time.
I am going to stop unless you have any other questions, but I do want to make one point. There is, as we say in the briefs, another problem in your cases that you asked me to bring your attention to. Roll and dollar are inconsistent with each other, and you should straighten them out. And I will reserve whatever time remains. Thank you.
Mr. Lloyd.
My name is Richard Lloyd. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney, and I was the trial counsel below. It is the government's position that the the conviction and sentence of the appellant should be affirmed. The appellant was a three-time convicted felon on February 18th of 2002. After a foot race, he was arrested after throwing down a .45 caliber pistol. Prior to trial, he moved to dismiss the indictment, stating that his civil rights had been restored. It was denied. We went to trial. He was convicted. And prior to sentencing, he again made an objection to the pre-sentence report that the conviction should not be counted because his civil rights have been restored. It was denied. He was sentenced to 210 months under the Armed Career Criminal statute. The defendant in this case obviously was not lulled by a belief that his civil rights had been restored. The letter, clearly on its face, looking at Vetrano, it's very similar to the letter in Vetrano. There's nothing in the letter that said that the appellant's civil rights were completely restored. It only looked at two rights, the right to vote and the right to hold office under the Constitution of Illinois. It never touched on the right to serve on a jury. It's clear that under 921A20, looking at the second sentence of that statute, there was no mousetrapping.
Do I understand that he received the letter after the event, after his arrest?
No, Your Honor. The letter was dated May 6th of 2002, which apparently, I'm not quite sure the sequence of events, because we only...
What was the date of the crime?
The date of the crime would have been February 18th of 2002, so it's very possible that he may have received that letter, that certificate, after the fact.
That was my question.
Yes, Your Honor, but the problem is that these...
But the letter says that his rights were restored as of 01, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's correct.
I was thinking in terms of being lulled more than anything else. If you didn't know about the letter, you'd hardly be in a position to be lulled.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would submit to the court that the under U.S. versus McKinley and U.S. versus Williams, this court has stated that in order to have civil rights restored, you had to have the three core civil rights, that being the right to vote, the right to hold office, and the right to serve on a jury. Looking purely at the letter on its face, the letter only deals with two of those core civil rights, and in fact does not deal wholly with the right to hold office, because only offices under the Constitution of the state of Illinois, there are certain offices by statute that the defendant would not be able to get, and that would be, for example, he could not hold or run for the office of sheriff in any county in Illinois.
Look, that's a real inhibition, I suppose, and a lot of people want to run for sheriff.
With three
down in the southern part of the state, there are quite a few, Your Honor. Your Honor, the position in U.S. versus McKinley and Williams is also held by the 1st, 3rd, 5th, 6th, and 9th circuits, and that was mentioned by this court in the Gillum case. And again, in Gillum, that defendant also was not lulled into the belief that his civil rights had been restored. And even if we threw out the letter and looked purely at the statute, I think it's clear under this court's opinion in Irwin in 1990, followed by the U.S. Supreme Court's case in Quran, that you look to the entire statute to determine whether or not the right to bear arms is accorded a person after the civil rights are restored.
Do you have any idea if this kind of letter is still being sent by the state of Illinois?
Your Honor, I am not positive. I think it is. These letters are computer generated. In fact, I tried to, after this motion was filed by the appellant, I tried to get an exact copy that the defendant received, and I was told that what happens is these letters are generated by computer, that they're not kept thereafter. I would submit to the court also that, particularly under Illinois law, even if all the civil rights were restored, we threw out the letter. The law is in Illinois is clear that a person who has been convicted of a violent felony cannot apply for or possess a firearm until 20 years after he's released from prison. So the appellant would lose on that score also. But also looking at this court's opinion in U.S. versus Vetrano, it's very, very clear, looking at the letter, this letter does not, signed by the appellant's parole agent, it does not purport to give back all the civil rights of the appellant. It only talks to certain rights that the defendant has, restoration of the right to vote and to hold offices, and to get licenses that the license was revoked solely as a result of the conviction. It does not purport to say all civil rights are restored and that you stand as if you were never convicted. If there are no further questions, I would relinquish the...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lloyd. Mr. Allen, anything further?
I do have a few points, Your Honor. First, the state has not denied that this is the appropriate letter. Moreover, there are identifying characteristics on it if this matters, although it's a factual question, not a legal question. It can be resolved definitively. Secondly, the government completely resists dealing with what the issue in this case is. The issue in this case is the distinction between document cases and no-document cases. The case they rely on, like McKinley and so on, are no-document cases. Where there is not a document, you look at the landscape of the law. When there is a document, you look at what the document communicated. Vetrano is a good example. There were five possibilities, one of which the court admitted would have resulted in the unless clause being invoked, but four of them didn't. So the actual holding in that case was not what the state says. It was instead that you couldn't prove by preponderance 4-1 against that, in fact, you had gotten a document that restored your rights. In each of these cases, again, each of the arguments, each of the points they make, they're failing to distinguish between document and no document cases. It doesn't matter what the Illinois law says about being a sheriff or doing anything if the document restores the rights. So the statute says restoration of rights. It's plain, it's simple, it's straightforward, and there's a simple rule that ought to emerge from this.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lloyd. Mr. Allen, thank you for accepting the appointment in this case, and give our thanks to Northwestern Law School also for donating your splendid services to the court.
Okay. Oh, we will.